Blog Talk Radio.
Sunday morning, another edition of the Power Alley. Steve Silver along with Bo Reed from letstalkrangers.com. Bo, it is another week in the book, spring training baseball. Are you excited, my man? I mean, every single week we're getting closer to the start of the 2015 regular season, and every single week goes by, I look forward to this show where you and I can get together, collectively put our nerd brains together, and figure out just exactly how this thing is going to shape out. Bo, I know, like you, you're excited, aren't you? No? Yes? Maybe? I don't know.
Okay, I am a little excited, obviously, but I'm also a little bummed, Steve. I'm a little bummed.
if I were you, and not to give the whole, you know, not to give the entire show away, because I know, like, you're right on the precipice of just giving the entire show away. I had to stop you. I know exactly why you're bummed, because if I was in your shoes and I suffered a loss of the magnitude that you went through, the range of emotion, I probably would be coming into this show a little doom and gloom, a little sad, a little depressed.
Steve, well, I mean, look, I mean, obviously, you know, that the particular injury is a bummer, but that's not why I'm bummed.
Okay. But go ahead.
I am bummed because Will Ferrell didn't make the Dodgers. That He comes out, he faces one batter, he's so conniving that he gets this guy to bunt on the first pitch of the inning, him out, and then Don Mattingly automatically comes out and cuts him. I'm really bummed about that.
Are you like me and have gotten completely Will Ferrell out? Like, here's the thing.
No, not at all.
I don't think he's funny anymore. I like Will Ferrell, but I don't think he's funny anymore because it's the same shtick. It's the same shtick that ultimately killed Adam Sandler, Mike Myers, and all these other cats, you know, that eventually came from Saturday Night Live. At one point, these guys were absolutely funny. But I think as a comedian, aren't the best comedians the ones that know how to evolve?
You know, absolutely. No, yeah, absolutely. I understand that, but he was downright funny playing baseball.
I liked Will Ferrell, like, in his big days when he was doing, you know, the Blades of Glory, and he was doing the, you know, the Talladega Nights, which I still think is an incredibly funny movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's still trying to do some of the same things, and so his act is still kind of the same. And to me, I just don't think it's funny anymore. I mean, there's a reason why I was a huge Adam Sandler fan at one point in time, and I don't think that he's funny anymore. At least you have to call a spade at some point. It's funny. I understand he's doing it for a good cause, for cancer patients that, you know, that are trying to get, you know, trying to get a college education. I'm sure that's important to,
sure,
you know, I'm sure that's important in some area of charity work. So I get it. I can do it. But it's funny to me because I think it was just, it took away from me. It took away from what I would consider would be an important game. I understand it. It's B games. And so you're looking at a lot of minor leaguers. I get it. But still, I thought it was just a ham and egg type of thing. And I could have done without it.
I enjoyed it immensely. It was funny.
I know, I'm all serious. He comes out
and he's talking to the catcher. He's like, "Hey, okay, so what's not even put down for the slurge? Like, what the hell is that?" Oh, it's a slurge. I picked it up in Japan, so just give me a double five for the slurge.
I would like to see a Will Ferrell movie where he's playing baseball. I think it's kind of funny because he was doing all these movies, and it was kind of funny. He covered NASCAR, he covered figure skating, oddly enough, and then he covered, you know, the ABA when he was, you know, with the Flint Tropics and semi-pro, which I still think was kind of a funny movie. I'd like to see him do a baseball movie. I think that would be ultimately, I think that would suit him quite well. So who knows, maybe this will lead to it. But, Bo,
maybe.
outside of the grins, you know, of what Will Ferrell was able to provide us this week, there was baseball. Another week goes by. From a standpoint of where we left off last week to where we are this week, was there anything that stood out to you this week of spring training baseball?
Not really, man. I mean, it's still we're approaching the point where you're going to start seeing roster cuts. You're going to start seeing guys go out there for the third or fourth start. At that point is when it really gets interesting, and you really start to take a look at some of these rosters. But that being said, there has actually been some good news out of Rangers camp this week, believe it or not. So, yeah, Joey Gallo's hitting moonshots. Derek Holland's back on the mound. Matt Harrison is throwing off a half mound, which I didn't know they had.
Oh, yeah. They have half mound, three-quarter mound, and east mound.
Yeah, he's throwing off a half mound. Martin Perez is throwing off a half mound, so it's not all doom and gloom for Texas.
Well, you know, it kind of is. And what I will say by that is at least you knew exactly who that ball was going to be going to every fifth day starting from game one, and that was Yu Darvish.
Yeah.
And this started with just, and again, I hate to get back to the text message I sent you because I'm not one of those I told you so type of guys. But
yes, you are.
Okay, fine, I am. I told you so. And it's not because it's not like I'm relishing this fact. It was any time that you lose your ace, you cannot replace that. You can't replace production. This is a guy who has been a three-time All-Star in three straight seasons he's been in Texas, and there is a reason for it. The guy is just absolutely unbelievable when he's ready to go and when he's right. We saw this at the end of last season when he started having elbow issues. He had the MRI in the offseason, which checked out fine. And, of course, as soon as he gets into the grind of spring training, all of a sudden those elbow issues turn into the triceps, and all of a sudden there's a partial tear of the UCL. And as soon as you hear the name Dr. James Anders, your season's over. That is, I don't know if there's anything else but the kiss of death. The dude has made just buku money. He has made bank off being a doctor. That's fine, but if you're an athlete or you're a fan and you hear the name Dr. James Anders, your season is done. It is the kiss of death. Anybody that goes to see him, you're about to have surgery. So, as soon as that name was brought into it, his season's over. We already knew it was going to be over anyways.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether he had a surgery or not, it was ultimately you're going to lose him for 4 to 6 months anyway. So he has the surgery. He'll be back hopefully in time for the start of next season. The start of the 2016 regular season, but I will say this, and we usually at this point in the show, Bo, we usually get into some of our topics that are swirling around Major League Baseball, and we will get to it. But I think what we're going to do first is get into our main topic, which is how does this affect the psyche of the Texas Rangers? Last season, Bo, this team was decimated by injuries. Top to bottom, this team, I don't think I can pinpoint a team that had a season literally derail and have it affected by injuries as much as last year's Texas Rangers. It seemed like everybody got hurt last year, and they either all got hurt at the same time or just when somebody was getting healthy enough, somebody else would go down, and you could not have any type of continuity within the season in a structure. And I would probably assume that mentally weighed on the Texas Rangers, and now all of a sudden things start, you turn the calendar, a fresh new season, a fresh new start, everything is starting to feel good, and all of a sudden, bam, the guy that you ultimately could not lose, you lost him now. That has to play into the mindset and the psyche of this team, because now all of a sudden, you start to think like, maybe we're snake bitten.
Well,
what's going through this team right now?
I think it's affected the fans more than the team. I really do. The fans... And I was guilty of this as well. Here we go again. First it's Jurickson Profar. Then Derek Holland misses a couple weeks with a sore shoulder. Now Yu Darvish is out for the year. It's the fans are feeling the psyche more than the players are. In fact, there's been stories coming out of Surprise over the last couple of days. They're talking to the players about this. And the players are saying, look, it's one guy. It's not 17 like it was last year. It's one guy. Our rotation's going to have to step up. We've got rotation depth. John Daniels actually did a very good job adding depth to this rotation. There's a lot of options for this team. Prince Fielder is healthy, and he's launching moonshots in Surprise. Shin Chu Chu is healthy. Everyone else is healthy.
Right.
So what this team is doing, and you're hearing this in the quotes coming out of Surprise, they're ready to go. And they're going to go, and they're not – it's almost like the fans are saying, oh, great, it's just like last year, and the players are saying, the hell it's not.
It has
it's
to.
Not going to be like last year.
It has to weigh on you a little bit because, me being a former athlete and understanding that injuries are a part of it, and that's one thing. But once you start feeling that you can't stay healthy, it weighs on you because you're not able to do, you're not able to do the things that you're supposed to be able to do in the confines of a team sport. And ultimately, that is, that is the common goal. And it just seems to me that in this state of mind, in this current state that we're in, the Texas Rangers needed all pieces, regardless if it's one guy. They're going to say the same thing. I mean, one guy is not going to affect the team. But let's be perfectly honest. We're talking about baseball, where each individual piece definitely plays into the collective. It's the only sport that I know where individuality is so vital to the overall construction of team success, because if one person is missing or one person has a bad year, it could determine, the difference between one win and one loss. And as we saw last year, especially in Seattle, that eight-game losing streak in the beginning part of the year ended up coming and biting that team when they absolutely needed wins the most. I mean, that's what I love about baseball. It's the individualistic aspect of it. It definitely plays into the totality of whether your team wins or loses. And had to have a dude like Yu Darvish, who is an ace. Yeah, that's great. You got Yovani Guerrero, and that pickup is looking even more monster now for the Texas Rangers than anything else, because at least you had a guy, though, who at least at one point had been an ace in Milwaukee, so at least he understands the mindset. So that's going to be huge for Milwaukee, but now all of a sudden you lose that benefactor at the top of that rotation. It was a guy that you knew for a fact, and it gets back to the mindset, gets back to the psyche, because when he's on the mound, that team feels like that they're going to win every single start that he takes the mound. And now you take that crucial piece out of that equation, and now you're giving it to a guy like Gerrit Collin, who's not an ace. He is not an ace. It never has been an ace. And now you're putting players in roles that they're not necessarily accustomed to. And you're absolutely right. Most of these guys now have to step up, though. They have to step up.
Oh, yeah.
They individually have to take the bull by the, take the horn, bull by the horns. I don't like to use that metaphor because it's so funny. but they have to. You know what I mean? Now it's not necessarily offensively. It's going to be pitching, and this is it's a massive blow. It would be like the Mariners losing Felix Hernandez. It's like the Tigers losing Verlander for an extended stretch. Although they have been missing Verlander because he's not the same person. But you get what I'm saying.
Right. I get what you're saying.
It's like the Dodgers losing Clayton Kershaw for the entire year. These type of things are devastating, and of course they're not going to say it. They're not going to be like, "Well, the season's over." No, but at the same time, you lose that audit. To me, Yu Darvish was one of those automatics in the league where it's once he takes them out, it doesn't matter where he's pitching. Once you take them out, of course he's not. You're not going to say that, in a Game 7 World Series type of situation, who do you want on the mound? Yu Darvish never gets mentioned, but then again, you could mention him because he's that good. He's that good. And he goes a long ways for the mindset of the Texas Rangers, where now you just don't have that. And I'm not going to sit here and engage in hyperbole to say to the extent where maybe that the rest of the Texas Rangers don't feel that way about Gerrit Collin as they would about Darvish. I don't know. I'm not going to get into the mindset that deeply, but I will have to say, though, as a player, as a former player, where you do gravitate to certain players because you know that they're that dominant and you can count on that, more so than other people, it's going to be hard. It's going to be interesting to see if the rest of that collective will buy into a guy like Gerrit Collin or a Yovani Gallardo and understand that, and give them that same confidence as they gave you Darvish. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. It makes sense. But I tell you, really looking at the way this team has responded to this injury, it's almost like they got a chip on the shoulder, Steve. It's almost like they're saying, you know what? We went through a lot last year. We're not letting that happen this year. We lost our ace, but we still got a deep rotation. We still got our starting nine. We still got everybody else. This is not going to be like last year. It's almost like they have a chip on their shoulder.
This is why
it really seems that way. And maybe the Yu Darvish injury has galvanized them.
This is why I really miss Ron Washington for this team, because Ron understood this team to its basic core. I'm not saying the new guy is not going to be, is ill-equipped to handle these type of things. It's just when you had a guy like Ron Washington who understood each player personally on an individual level and understood how to galvanize a team and rally a team around each other. And having, you know, Ron Washington has done that with this Texas Rangers time and time again. And so, if you know, this would be a case where Ron Washington probably would have, you know, been huge. And now you don't have that, and you have a new guy who has not been around the block. I will just say it's an underlying factor for me because of the fact that he has not been around, and this is his first rodeo with this team and this organization. And so, as much as it's a feeling out process for the players, it's the same. And it's going to be interesting to see how that is now going to be incorporated and how he relays that message to the rest of his players and says, listen, Giovanni needs your support, or Colby needs your support, Derek Holland needs your support, because if you don't do that, you know, we're going to be playing an individual game within the confines of the team, and you thought last year was bad.
No, I honestly, Steve, I mean, this team is still a very good baseball team. And, yeah, it sucks losing Yu Darvish. There's no way around that. It just sucks. But it's still a very good baseball team. It's still a very good starting nine. It's a very good bullpen. And the rotation, now it's going to have Detweiler in it for sure.
Right.
You might see a guy like Ronaldo, Mejia, Tepish, Nick Martinez. You might see them in the fifth spot for a little while, but Martin Perez is going to be back at the All-Star break. Matt Harrison, believe it or not, actually could make it back by the All-Star break. So I understand that losing Yu Darvish is a big deal. Everyone understands that.
Oh, God.
But at the same time, this team is still a very good baseball team.
I will say this. I will say, and that sounds nice when you get these guys by the All-Star break, but that's the first 3 months of the season. And you understand that seasons are made or break, made or lost in the first, I'll just say it, in the first 30 days of the season.
Unless you're the A's last year where you lose in the last half.
All right. Well, listen, touche. I get that. What I'm saying, touche. That's a very valid point. What I'm saying though is, when you look at it, this rotation with Yu Darvish, I was buying it more so than without it, and it looks as that right now. And of course, this is all just based on baseball perspective, major league depth charts. If you're not a fan of this website, you should be, because I love it. It gives you a really good idea of exactly how certain teams are thinking. Now, granted, there is no insider information. It's just exactly how they look at this. They have Gallardo 1, Lewis 2, Detweiler 3, Holland 4, Tepish 5. And even in that construction, when you look at it, you really don't have a 1, and you have a 2, and then you have a lot of 3s and 4s in this rotation. And we've said this time and time again on this show as we were breaking down certain teams. That is not a good equation to go into the season, not necessarily having that bona fide guy at the top of the rotation where that's where everything starts and everything falls into place after that. And now you're looking at this as a I don't like the idea of Gallardo going up against Felix Hernandez on the first day of the season, or name your ace going up against your two going up against Colby Lewis. It just does not look good. I wouldn't take Colby Lewis over Hisashi Iwakuma or some of the better twos in this league. That being said, Bo, you know, this is, to me, that's why this is alarming, because it puts people in positions where either A, they haven't been there in a while, or B, have never been in, and I just don't like, especially in the early parts where wins are at a premium in the early part of the season. Man, it's a tough pill to swallow if you're the Texas Rangers. It's tough,
but you know, these players have responded in the best way you can possibly ask them to. Jeff Bannister, you know, he's a guy who, let's be honest, this is a guy that's been through a lot in his life, okay? He's got never, ever quit. That's his hashtag on Twitter, is never, ever quit. And that's what he's preaching to this team, is never, ever quit. And you're hearing about guys like Prince Fielder, who, after his year off from baseball, where he was able to really rediscover his love for the game and reconnect with his family. Now, all of a sudden, Prince is a whole different person. He's swinging a healthy bat. He's in his locker, and he's basically telling the press, look, if anyone in here wants to give up because we lost Yu Darvish, get them the hell out of this clubhouse.
Right.
Which is what you want to hear from a team like this, going through something like this. It's what you want to hear from them. Because last year was that bad. It was that awful. It was that jarring emotionally.
right.
see all these guys go down left and right. I mean, it was literally one player a week for the first 6 weeks of the season. It was one player a week down for the rest of the year. You don't want to see that again. And this team, it's almost like they've galvanized around each other ever since Yu Darvish went down.
Does this change anything for you with the Texas Rangers? Does this change how you've looked at them as far as projected prognostication, you know, just looking at it and say, okay, well, listen, I mean, we talked about this all off season, Bo, and there's a reason why the Rangers are a very intriguing team, because you're right, they have a tremendous amount of talent, but there's a lot of question marks surrounding it. Mm-hmm. If everything breaks even, this could be a 4-team race, not just a 3-team race, and now you lose arguably one of the best pitchers in this division, and it shakes things up. How does this change the Rangers for you? And now, before you ask that question, take off the fan hat. I mean, you know, I understand.
I'm taking off the fan hat. Don't worry. I got my analyst hat on. No.
Take it off.
You know, honestly, before Yu Darvish went down, really before spring training, when we talked about this, I don't know what Texas is. No one really knows what Texas is, because we don't know if Prince is going to be Prince and Chu's going to be Chu and Derek's going to be able to put it together. We don't know. This is a team, the best way I can put it, It's the biggest differential between ceiling and floor I've ever seen in a baseball team. They could be really, really good, 95 to 100 wins, or they can crater at 75 wins. It could be either one of those. I don't know. So to answer your question, no. My prognostication of this team has not changed, because I still don't know what they are. And I'm not going to know what they are until I get a few weeks into the season and I see if Prince is healthy, if Chu is healthy, if Andrus is back to being Elvis Andrus, if Neftali Feliz is back to being the closer he was when they went to the World Series, if Colby Lewis is going to do what he did at the end of the season last year, all season long. I just have to wait and see.
Right.
They could win the West. They could finish in last place. They could do either one. It just depends on a lot of different things.
Right.
Officially, and we'll get into this later, officially I'm not picking them to win the West, but they could win the West, I guess is the best way to put it.
I think it changes for me a lot, and I know that today we are going to get into a lot of it. We're going to get a lot of prognostication, because what I want to do today is I want to have a little test. I want to do a little picking today, and then come back to it, you know, on the first week of the regular season, and see if things have changed. I like doing this. I like doing it spring training and also at the beginning of the season. I know it's a really short gap, but things definitely have the ability to change. So today we're going to be doing that. Early season Cy Young candidates, MVPs. I want to get through it all today, so we're going to do that. But before we do that, Bo, I definitely want to get into the conversation of pitching injuries, because again, we've had a lot of pitching injuries of Tommy John, especially over the last 2 years. It's a very interesting conversation, and it all coincides not only with Yu Darvish having it, but also Josh Edgen of the New York Mets, reliever, very good reliever, I think, at least, and one of the better arms that the Mets possess in their bullpen. He's going under Tommy John surgery, and so I want to get your quick take, you know, especially when it comes to this injury. What is your belief of these rash of Tommy John injuries, and just, you know, pitching injuries, you know, altogether? There has to be some type of information that you've extrapolated. There has to be something that makes sense in your mind. I know that I'm very vocal about this, and I think I want to get into it, but I want to get your take first. You know, just what do you think is the root cause?
I don't know. I mean, maybe they're throwing too many pitches in the minor leagues. Maybe they're throwing too many pitches in Little League. I mean, it goes back to Little League. It really does. That's why you have pitch counts on Little League pitchers. Why you don't want to see college pitchers throw a lot of pitches, especially towards the end of the season. What is that Texas coach where he threw his guy out there like every other day throwing 150 pitches? You know, maybe it's stuff like that. Maybe it's a change in throwing. I don't know. There could be many different things that's causing all these Tommy Johns, but it really is becoming an epidemic at this point.
I don't think they're throwing enough. And I think it's an oversensitivity to the culture of pitching, pitch counts and some of these type of things. I do know that a lot of people think it's because their arms are just not trained enough, and especially when you get to the major league level, the art of the long toss has almost seemed to go by the wayside. Pitchers are not throwing long tosses on their off days, where you're really just kind of extending their arm. It seems to be this very concentrated bullpen efforts. You're only allowed to throw a certain amount of pitches because you don't want arm fatigue. And also, let's also throw money into this equation as well, too, because organizations are throwing around so much money that they want to protect their investment. But while what they fail to realize is because you're coddling some of these kids, early in the minor league careers, or even once they get to the major league level and have success, back in the day, there was no such thing as a pitch count. Some of these guys would just throw and throw and throw, and you never saw arm fatigue. You never saw catastrophic injuries. I mean, Tommy John surgery was like, it was like a solar eclipse. It was like it hardly ever happened. I mean, you'd see shoulder fatigue and you'd see some of those type of things, but again, it was like the eclipse. It rarely ever happened, and I just don't think there's enough emphasis on routine and patterns and consistency. What's kind of funny is I'll use this because you and I are gym guys. Mm-hmm. You're a really big time gym guy. But but what I'm saying though is you have a routine and it's repetitive and you do it a lot, and because of it, your muscles are trained every single day to understand that this is exactly what you're going to do you have to do this to get your body big.
Yeah.
It's muscle memory. It's everything that goes along with that. And if you don't do it enough, or if let's say that you try to scale back.
Mm-hmm.
And then you tried to go hard again, you would hurt yourself.
Absolutely, you would.
You would hurt yourself. It's the exact same thing. And what's kind of funny about this is if you're not doing something enough and then you try to go hard, you're going to hurt yourself. And I think that is, that's what I think it is. I don't think they're doing it enough. I don't think there's enough evidence. There's not enough. I don't know why I just missed the word. There's not enough emphasis on long toss. I think there's too much emphasis on pitch counts when you really should just allow the pitcher to just do his thing and be able to throw. I'm not talking about overthrowing. It's just, if a guy is at 100 pitches and he still feels strong, he still feels good, I don't think there's a problem with him throwing 3 or 4 pitches as long as he's still effective. And I think that, I think the recovery time is still going to be fine 5 days later when he takes the hill again. I think there's a lot of ridiculousness that's going along with this, but I also believe, Bo, that money plays a huge part in this, and I think organizations have this weird jaded thought, Bo, that it's, if you keep a pitcher at 100 pitches, he's going to be fresh. You're going to be able to extend him into the postseason. But I want to just ask the Los Angeles Dodgers, how that worked out for him, for Clayton Kershaw last year. And by the way, I don't mean to take pot shots at Kershaw, but again, there's no correlation between 80 pitches on day one or having a pitch count on day one of the season and trying to keep those innings towards the back end. There's no correlation between success of trying to save pitches and save innings early in the season and tacking them at the end of the season. To me, it's utterly ridiculous.
No, I'm with you. And I think what's interesting to me is take a guy like Cliff Lee, who probably does need ligament replacement surgery. He probably does.
Yeah.
Look at that elbow. He's got, Cliff Lee, you're talking about one of the smoothest, softest windups in the game, and he hurt his elbow.
Yeah.
Okay, something's wrong. There's something causing all of these Tommy Johns. It's at a point now where you look at your rotation, you're like, okay, which one of these guys is going to get Tommy John this year?
Well, okay, so here's the deal, man. I was listening to a former Mariner pitcher by the name of Jamie Moyer. You know who Jamie Moyer is. Probably one of the most nastiest changeups in the history for left-handed pitchers. He basically said, listen, man, I pitched for 15 to 20 years, and it was, no matter what you say about a changeup pitcher versus a fastball pitcher, I had the same wear and tear on my body as Kevin Brown, who was a sinker fastball guy. He basically said, listen, it doesn't matter how long you pitch, the wear and tear is the exact same thing, the travel is the exact same thing, whatever you want to say it's always the exact same thing. Okay. The thing about it was, as he said, listen, between my starts, I played long toss all the time. I kept the exact same program, the exact same intensity, because if I slipped up and if I didn't go as hard, you bring the risk of injury. And when you see a lot of some of these injuries, it's because I think maybe it's an issue of comfortability, but it's also, I think it's also, for some of these, people, players are now being trained with the mindset of, that's just the way things should be, and it shouldn't be. It should be literally up to the pitcher
right
on himself to to, you know, to gauge whether or not he's going hard or he's going strong in the game. And again, I get back to the whole weightlifting thing. I mean, if you decide to taper off and then you try to go hard, you bring injury back into the equation. You and I both know this from that standpoint because we have aches and pains everywhere. So, I mean, we understand exactly when we go hard and when we go soft. I mean, it's a fine balancing act. We're seeing ligaments being torn on a daily now.
Yeah. No, I think you're honest about that. I think you're absolutely right. You know, and you look at this, it's really young players that are having this problem.
Yeah.
Outside of Cliff Lee. Cliff Lee's the only veteran that is having this issue, but it's mostly young guys. I mean, I can halfway kind of understand what happened to Yu Darvish because in Japan, they throw a massive amount of pitches in Japan.
Yes, they do.
But they also do a six-man rotation. And maybe and you look at some of these Japanese pitchers coming over and they have arm problems, maybe that's why, because we have a five-man here instead of a six-man.
Well, and I don't think they attach pitch counts to
No, they don't.
I think they just roll them every 5 days, and it's if it's evident that your stuff is not good or you're fatigued, you get taken out of the ball game, or whether you're at pitch 51 or pitch 151. I don't think it really matters over
right
there. I think it's just you have a job to do and go throw. And I think it's I think there's a lot of things that are attached to it. It's interesting. It's interesting to find out, and what's going to be interesting about this. I mean, I'll be able to talk to Rick Waits about this a little bit during the season. He's the pitching coach of the Seattle Mariners. It's going to be interesting to see exactly what he says. He's an old school guy. It would be interesting to get his perspective on it. But Bo, let's get into the meat and potatoes of today's show, because again, it's going to be a fun show. Let's put on our prognostication hats. Let's do that, because we've dissected this thing front and back, left and right, all offseason. We've gone through moves, whether they're good or bad for this team, and now we have a very good idea of what some of these teams are going to be looking like. We've seen about 2 weeks of spring training. We should know exactly what we're looking at. I wouldn't say completely at this stage. We will know exactly what we're looking at from the first game of the season, but a week and a half in, 2 weeks in, it'd be interesting to see exactly how Bo feels about the American League and the National League, and just who he thinks is going to be potentially a front runner for the American League MVP, Cy Young Awards. It's fun. I like playing this game. It's fun. Next week, we're going to bring on a buddy of ours who certainly is very opinionated on the subject of just how he feels. So this week, it's you and I. We'll just kind of throw it back and forth, and we'll just see exactly how it feels. Bo, go ahead and just give me an idea of just how you feel so far about the American League, just your general basis of both leagues. Tell me how you feel about it, and tell me, what direction you feel that the league is going to play out this year.
Well, the American League is wide open to me. I think that the American League West is the best division in the American League. I really do. I think that the East is pick 'em. You can honestly put all of them on a dartboard and throw a dart, and that's who you got in the American League East. The Central, you're going to see a bit of a shift. The Tigers have definitely come back to the pack, and the pack may have even passed them. I like the Indians. I like the White Sox. I think the Royals are going to come back. You look at the West, it's Seattle's division to lose. I mean, it really is. You look at the American League West, Texas has a bunch of question marks. The Angels have no pitching. And even with Josh Hamilton, they've got no hitting. The A's could, if some of these guys that Billy Bean traded for hit, then they could be back in the middle of this thing. But I think Seattle's the most balanced team in the West, so you're looking at Seattle, you're looking at Cleveland or Chicago, you're looking at maybe the Yankees, possibly the Red Sox coming out of the divisions and in the wild cards, and that's going to be a fantastic playoff. The National League, though, it's going to be just like last year.
Right.
Identical to last year, because there hasn't been that much movement. The only team that didn't make the playoffs last year that actually legitimately could this year is Miami.
Right. There's... For the most part, I agree with you. I think the consistency is definitely in the National League. You know exactly what you're going to get out of the National League within a differential of just maybe a few teams. Most coming in the East, I think we can honestly say that as much as the fireworks were handed out in San Diego this year, I still think that you and I both think it's a wait and see what the San Diego Padres were. As you know, we kind of been tracking Miami, and we kind of feel the same way about Miami. I think there's going to be two teams that are usually worth watching outside of the Washington Nationals in the East, and that's going to be, you know, the New York Mets and the Miami Marlins. I think we're going to be watching the Padres, not just because we want to see it, whether these moves are going to lead to excellence. For me, I could honestly say I'm watching to see how quick it's going to blow up. I don't mean to be mean, San Diego. I really don't. I try to stay classy when it comes to San Diego, but I think there's too many. I think there's too many roosters in the hen house. If that analogy sits well with you, I think we're going to go with that one. I don't know how that thing is going to play out, and it's going to be interesting to see exactly how they mold the three corner outfielders, and you know it's going to be interesting to see how that thing plays out. Anyway, I think in the American League, Bo, I listen. Over the last 2 years, I thought the American League has been on a downtick. We witnessed it last year with Baltimore and Kansas City playing for the American League championship. I think that really tells you that
right. It's
been interesting. This is an interesting league because the teams that you would expect, the teams that are big money teams in this league, have been on the downslide. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, the Titans have been in the playoffs, but they have not lived up to what the money that they spend says that they should be able to do. I'm not saying they're a bad team. It just lets you know that I think there's more. I don't want to use this word, but I think there is more parity in the American League, and because of it, I wouldn't say that the league is watered down. I just don't think it's as clear cut as the National League. You know, in the National League, that the Nationals, Cardinals, Dodgers, those three teams are going to be there, and of course, without bearing any type of significance, you probably would say that the Giants, the Pirates, and the Marlins now are probably going to be in the top teams in the race for the National League. And the American League is wide open. I'm not saying that it's a bad league. I'm just saying it's wide open.
Yeah.
And because of it, we had teams like Kansas City who seemingly came out of nowhere to the common fan, and Baltimore, who on paper should not look like they should be winning 90 games in any given year, yet they win divisions. So I mean, it's interesting to me. And I think for the American League, I think it's going to play out the exact same way. I don't think there's going to be clear cut favorites. I think it's going to be races that are going to be fun, but they're not going to have the exact same team names as everyone expects to be. I mean, I'm sure yes, the Angels might be there. That's a common team. And of course, the Tigers are going to probably be contending in the Central. But for the most part, you know, it's going to be what it is. I think for me, the biggest intrigue is going to be in the American League East, because I think we all agree that the American League West is going to be the best division in baseball this year, and I think that's given. The American League East has a lot of question marks because, again, the Boston Red Sox are a team that seemingly can hit the ball at the park at any given point, but their pitching staff is certainly going to be at question because, again, this is going to be a team that's going to be trying to come from the bottom floor again. And trying to claim the standings, and yet this is a team that doesn't have a bona fide ace in the rotation. They have a lot of reclamation projects that they're trying to give jobs to. Justin Masterson. It's going to be interesting to see if Rick Porcello, you know, in that situation in Fenway Park is going to either benefit or be a hindrance to his performance. So there's a lot of question mark with that. The Yankees are exactly the Yankees. I mean, because of their overspending, they put themselves in a situation where they couldn't go out and get the big name. And so Brian Cashman quietly has had to retool that team. It's going to be interesting to see how the Yankees are going to be playing. The Rays, we say this every single year about the Rays. They have great pitching, but are they going to have enough offense? The Blue Jays, we both agree, fraudulent. And, of course, there's the Orioles, who were picked to finish last in this division. And every single year, we say it every single year,
this
is a team that should not be winning 90 games and competing, and yet they've won division. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. I think there's going to be a lot of intrigue in the American League East. In the AL Central, you really have two really good teams, and then you have two kind of mediocre teams, and you have one really bad team in the Minnesota Twins. What's interesting about this, and any of those four teams, whether it's the Royals and the White Sox, who I think really for the most part are mediocre, they got better. Well, at least the White Sox did. The Royals kind of took a step back. But for the most part, any one of those four teams, I feel, can win this division. But I really think you're going to see something different this year in the AL Central. And, of course, the AL West, I think you hit it right on the head. I have the Mariners coming out of the American League this year, and it's not because I'm from Seattle, Bo. It's just because when you look at just the complexity of each team in each division, I think you can say that, you know what, Seattle has the least amount of question marks, and it makes you feel a little bit more comfortable saying, hey, if you held a gun to my head today and said, okay, who's going to win the American League? I'm going to say the Mariners, It's not to say that they don't have question marks. I just think they have the fewest question marks of any team in this league, outside of maybe Baltimore. I think right now I'm comfortable saying that. That being said, do I think the winner of the World Series is coming from the American League? I don't. I think it's coming from the National League again. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting, Bo.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and I agree with you on that. You know, the National League, you're talking about, let's just take a look at it. I mean, if the Nationals come out of the National League, you're going to face Scherzer, you're going to face Strasburg, you're going to face Gio Gonzalez, you're going to face Doug Fister.
And you were going
to chug or not.
You faced a pretty good pitching staff last year, and of course the Giants. And that's interesting about the second wild card, because it's almost created a hockey type of thing where, unfortunately, the better team loses all the time, because if you just run into a hot goalie, you're done.
Yeah.
And the San Francisco Giants last year were the hot goalie. So it was interesting. As good as the Nationals were, I thought the Nationals had the chance to win the World Series last year. I think I might have picked them to win the National League last year. And of course, you run into a hot goalie at the right time. It doesn't matter how good your pitching staff is, and I feel you, man. The Nationals have it. The Nationals easily have the best pitching staff in baseball. Period.
And right.
Yet, I don't think I have them winning the World Series this year.
Well,
it's a show me situation.
Well, I mean, they've got problems in the back end of their bullpen, and they've got problems in their offense. I mean, you can have an incredible starting pitching, but you still got to hit a little, and you got to be able to close out games in October.
True.
But look at the rest of the National League. The Dodgers, you have Kershaw and Greinke, 1-2.
Yep.
Giants, look at the Giants. Look at the pitching staffs in the National League. This is why they keep winning the World Series.
It's true. It is very true. I like in the National League. Let's start in the National League. Obviously, I like Washington coming out of the East. I don't think there's a team that's going to be remotely better. And I know that we talked about this just a few weeks ago, and what I will say is I really like the Miami Marlins. I think their pitching staff is pretty good. I think if we ranked pitching staffs in this division, 1, 2, 3, it'd probably go Washington, the New York Mets. I know they lost Josh Eggen out of their bullpen, but I still like that pitching staff. They get Matt Harvey back. That's going to be so huge for the New York Mets. I got Washington, the New York Mets, followed by the Miami Marlins. But then again, if you're asking me about offenses, I'm probably going to put the Miami Marlins first, followed by the Washington Nationals, followed by the New York Mets. And in terms of balance, I probably would take the Miami Marlins as far as total balance in this division. That being said, I still think that Washington's pitching staff is so overwhelmingly good in the confines of 162. I think they're going to win this division. I don't think it's going to be by 10, like Fangraphs and also Baseball Prospectus thinks that they're going to be. I don't think it's going to be a 10-game differential. It wouldn't even surprise me if it was higher than 5. I think this division is actually going to come down to the last week of the season, and the Nationals win it by 3. I think the Nationals win it by 3. I think the Miami Marlins are going to have a very good season. Do I think it's going to be 98, 99 wins for the Nationals? I don't. I think it's probably going to be 90. I'm going to say 90, Bo, 90 to 93. Fangraphs has them at 94 and 68. And they have the Marlins at 81-81. I mean, they're thinking this is going to be a 13-game gap. I don't see it that way. I have the Washington Nationals winning this thing with 93 wins, and I think the Marlins finish with 90 wins this year.
Yeah.
And grab a wild card.
I agree. Yeah, I definitely think Miami's going to get one of those wild card spots.
So you got the Nationals. You got the Nationals in the East, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Nationals in the East.
And I like the New York Mets. They have them. Fangraphs has them projected right about 81, but I can probably see like 81 to 84 as well too for the Mets. I think I really don't believe the Mets have enough offense to really even stay in this race past.
Wow.
I'm going to say it past August 14th. Right after the trade, I'm sure they're going to be in it.
August 14th. This is
why I say this, because I do believe that the Mets will be in it all the way until the trading deadline, and because they're not going to be able to part ways with some of that pitching. Let's be perfectly honest. The Mets, they just don't have the offense, and they're either going to have to get rid of some of their pitching, some of their very prized pitching prospect, maybe even a Jacob DeGrom. They're not going to be able to do it. They're not going to want to part ways, because they're going to feel like their pitching is going to keep them in it. And as a result, they're not going to get that bat that's going to help them. And I think what's going to happen is you're going to start seeing between the first week of August and the second week. That's why I say August 14th, the second week of August, that's when I think you're going to see the separation between the Marlins and Nationals and the rest of that division. So that's why I say second week of August.
August 14th. I'll mark on my calendar.
Yeah, that's when the Mets will be the Mets. Hey, man, we got to be specific here. Turning our attention to the National League Central, Bo, this is going to be a division where I think clearly, the St. Louis Cardinals are going to win this division. Fangraphs has them at 88 wins. It's probably going to be 88, between 88 and 91. I think the Cardinals are still supremely the best team in this division. And yes, they had a very big tragic offseason, losing one of their pitchers in a car, one of their players in a car accident, and then they turn around and use that tragedy to pick up, you know, probably easily one of the best defensive right fielders in Jason Hayward. They had to, they had to give up Shelby Miller in order to do it. But, this is the St. Louis Cardinals. They just have prospects in spades that are willing just to not even just plug them in. The way that they feel about their prospects is it's not about just bringing them up to get playing time. They feel like these guys can come up and help them win. That's always been their philosophy with some of their organizational moves. And, it's still going to be the same. I think this team is clearly the best team in this division by far, even much better than the Pittsburgh Pirates, who had a nice little two-year run. But because the Pirates are unable to retain some of their players, probably their biggest piece, their catcher that they lost, Russell Martin, to Toronto. Now, granted, they're not going to match a 5-year deal with Toronto. Gave them Toronto overspent, but the point is they didn't even make a play to try to match it. They just said, you know what, we're just not going to spend. So, unfortunately, I still like Pittsburgh, but they're projected at 85. I don't think they're going to reach 85. As a matter of fact, I would be surprised if they reach the 81 to 82 win type of threshold. I think that's really kind of where they're at this year. I still think Pittsburgh has at least a decent offense, but something about losing some of these guys that were core to the unity of that team. I guess you can say the clubhouse guys, the good clubhouse guys that have a tendency to keep things right where they need to be. Russell Martin was one of those guys. I'm not going to say that one guy's going to really make that big of a difference. But then again, once you start moving some of those key clubhouse guys, things just feel a little bit different. And I like Pittsburgh, but I think this year they're going to take a little bit of a step back. I'm going to say 4 games. They finish right at 500 and miss the playoffs this year. But I don't think there's a wild card team in this division. I don't like Chicago either. I don't have them winning 84 games like they're projected. But I think that's going to be a sub-500 team along with Milwaukee and Cincinnati. I think the Cardinals run away with this division. I'm just going to say it. Fangraphs says 88. I'm saying 90. I think that's about right for the St. Louis Cardinals. They win the Central. What about you?
I agree. I think Pittsburgh has definitely come back a little bit. The Cubs will be better, but I'm not drinking that Kool-Aid just yet.
Not at all.
I'm not drinking that Kool-Aid yet. But they are going to be better, and the whole division is going to be better, which is why the Cardinals. I think 90 wins is good for the Cardinals. Maybe up to 92, 93, but 90 seems to be about right.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's between 88 and 90. I think that seems about.
Yeah.
It doesn't take it's not going to take a Herculean effort to win this division. Not to say that the Cubs and the Pirates, the Brewers and the Reds are that horrible. I just think talent wise. This is easily going to be probably one of the worst divisions talent-wise. I just think there's a huge separation between talent with every one of these teams.
No, I agree.
Yeah. Turning our attention now to the National League West, Bo, and this is a very interesting division.
It is.
It's a fun division. The thing I don't like about this division is it's riddled with very good pitching staffs, and then they have lineups that you're kind of looking at like, really? Like, how is this a thing? I mean, how does this division even get mentioned with, divisions like the AL West for counterpoints? But what's kind of funny about this is you look at it, think of it this way. You look at the Dodgers pitching staff, Kershaw, Greinke, Rue, Brandon McCarthy, Brett Anderson, and you look at some of their bullpen pieces. They can pitch. They can pitch lights out. And then you look at their lineup and you're like, Jimmy Rollins, Carl Crawford, Puig is cool, and Adrian Gonzalez is okay, but Howie Kendrick, Jock Peterson, their third baseman is Juan Uribe. It's funny to me, and you look at this entire division, and it's riddled with just kind of so-so lineups. I mean, even the San Francisco Giants. This is kind of funny to me because I like the Giants. I really do like the Giants. I like their pitching staff. I really do. Very good pitching staff. Bumgarner, Hudson, Kane, Peavy, Lincecum, pretty decent pitching staff. But they lose a dude like Hunter Pence, and now all of a sudden their offense just looks kind of gross. I mean, it's gone. Panic, Belt, Posey, McGee, Gregor Blanco is now in. Gregor Blanco is going to be a starting left field with Noriega in right field. this is going to be a very pedestrian offense. I look up and down this division and I say, well, I guess it's going to be, well, let's just take the Dodgers by default because they have the best pitching. San Francisco has really good pitching as well, too. But they have the best pitching. I'm just going to take the Dodgers. According to Fangraphs, this is going to be a division that's going to be won by, I think it's like, what, 8 games now? Yeah, the Dodgers are favored by at 91 wins. The Padres and the Padres are finished second at 83, followed by the Giants at 82. I think I'm going to take Fangraphs up on this one. I do believe the Dodgers are going to win this one. I don't know if it's going to be by 8, but it's going to be dang near close to that. I'm probably going to say that 6. 6, this sounds about right. Last year's division was 1-6. I think that sounds about right, but I'm definitely taking the Dodgers in this division. I don't know about the Padres. I don't know how you feel about this, boat, but for me, the Padres are a wait and see. I get it. Big game Shields, it's a huge get. I don't think he's an ace anyways. I never really looked at him as an ace, and right. I understood that he was Kansas City's ace, but that was, well, Kansas City. It's different now in Kansas City. Now he goes to San Diego. Very good pitching park for him to pitch in, which is going to be good, but I'm waiting to see on everything, and I'm waiting to see how Bud Black is going to handle this team. Because again, I don't like the idea of Will Myers playing center field. It's going to be interesting to see exactly how he's going to be able to contain Matt Kemp and both Justin Upton, and then also try to figure out a way to get playing time for Cameron Maben. Usually in this situation, you throw one at first base, but they already have a first baseman there, so there's going to be a lot of moving pieces. It's wait and see for me on the Padres. I'm going to say the Giants will finish in second just because, again, I think they have the second best pitching in this division. Pitching, to me, is all that, especially in this division, it's all about pitching. I got the Dodgers finishing first, the Giants finishing second and grabbing that second wild card, and the Padres are on the outside looking and finishing third, followed by the Diamondbacks and then the Rockies finishing the last.
Yeah, I agree with it. The Padres, to me, I mean, they did a lot of things this offseason, but to me it was a lot of fluff, but not much substance. You know, they did a lot of things. They moved a lot of pieces around, but did they do enough to actually challenge the Dodgers and the Giants in the division? I don't think they did.
I think the good news about that, I think the good thing about A.J. Preller was he moved a lot of pieces, a lot of young pieces, a lot of prospects, but none of those guys are actually going to have a impact on the future, and I think that was the first thing that came to my mind. It's just going to be interesting because Jed Jericho, the second baseman, had a down year last year. I'm not a big Solarte fan at third baseman. I think he's more of a fifth infielder, but he's going to be the starting third baseman. And, of course, you know, Yonder Alonso is still – he's 27, still has yet to take that next step. We were talking about Alonso 3 years ago as being the next big thing, in baseball. Still has yet to even develop into the next big thing, the next big thing in baseball. So there's still a lot of question marks. Derek Norris is now their catcher. It's going to be interesting to see exactly how this thing plays out. And their bench is probably going to be one of the better ones. I mean, Cameron Maben and Will Venable are on their bench, two very good players that probably would be starting on a lot of different teams than this team. You know, they're coming off the bench. So that's actually a very good thing for the Padres. But, you know, I can't pencil this team into the playoffs just based on a good bench, although it helps in the National League. And, of course, I'm not really sold on the rotation because, again, James Shields is nice. That's good. But, you know, Andrew Cashner is what he is. Tyson Ross, again, is what he is. Ian Kennedy has been around this league for a while. And, of course, Brandon Morrow is the fifth starter. And, you know, listen, their bullpen's okay. Not a great bullpen, but it's going to be better than a lot of other bullpens. But I'm not a big fan of this rotation. I think this is going to be – I think you're right. I think they did a little bit more fluff in the offense, which was needed. But they also needed to add something else besides James Shields. If they added James Shields and maybe traded for somebody – to pair with it, and then you add that to Andrew Cashner, maybe Ian Kennedy, maybe I might buy this, but I'm sorry, I'm not a big fan of Brandon Morrow as a fifth starter. Not a big fan. I'm going to take a wait and see approach with the San Diego Padres, and right now, Bo, I have them on the outside looking in.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I absolutely. You know,
I like the Giants better. I put it that way. Even with the putrid offense that the Giants have, I'm still taking the Giants.
Yeah, I like the Giants better. I don't like them better than the Dodgers, but I definitely like the Giants to do actually what they did last year, which is make the playoffs. And we've seen the Giants do this. You know, they squeak in, and that pitching staff takes over October. Next thing you know, they're having a parade in San Francisco.
So how this would work out would probably be NL East versus NL West,
right?
In the opener, the one game playoff would be Marlins, the Giants, and the Marlins. That winner would probably take on the NL Central. So first of all, the play-in game, the National League play-in game, Marlins, Giants, and let's just, I'll even do you one step forward, okay? Let's just say that the one-game playoff is Madison Bumgarner versus, he will be back for this one. So let's just say that it's going to be, Madison Bum, in the one-game playoff, it's going to be Mad Bum versus, he's going to be back this year, Jose Fernandez. One-game playoff. National League, two of the National League's best pitchers for the one-game playoff. Because you know if the Marlins are in that one-game playoff, they're definitely not going to be throwing Matt Latos. They're probably not. They're not going to be throwing Kosar. They might throw Henderson Alvarez if he's available. But if Jose Fernandez, and he should be back. Who do you got? Mad Bum, or do you got Fernandez?
It's a coin flip, but at the same time, you really don't pick against Bumgarner in the playoffs.
Based off last year, I can understand why you would say that. But I'm actually going to take the Marlins. It's a one-game playoff.
That's because you want baseball to be turned upside down by the Marlins making the playoffs.
I do. Okay, you got me. Don't get me wrong. It's not that I don't like the Giants, but it's not an odd year, or it's not an even year, or whatever it is. And I'm not saying that they're not a good team. I'm gonna pick against conventional wisdom because it is a coin flip. I mean, we've seen this one game playoff won by teams that are probably not as good as other teams on paper. But again, it's just a one game playoff, so anything can happen. I'm taking the Marlins. Why not? What do you Giants Marlins one game playoff? Are you taking the Giants?
I'm taking the Giants.
All right. So in my National League playoff bracket, it's going to be the Marlins versus the Cardinals, and the Dodgers versus the Nationals. I'm going to take the Cardinals over the Marlins, and I'm going to take them in four. And I'm going to take the Los Angeles Dodgers in five. Over the Nationals. Again, the Nationals not getting out of the first round. Again, on my side, it's going to be the Dodgers versus the Cardinals in the NLCS. This is consistency of the St. Louis Cardinals, but you know what? I think the Cardinals have the Dodgers number, especially in the playoffs. We saw exactly what happened last year, but this is also the most consistent team in baseball. Four straight NLCS appearances, and also they know how to win championships. I'm taking the Cardinals and the NLCS in six, Bo. They're my team coming out of the National League this year.
I like the Dodgers.
Okay, so you have the Dodgers over the Nationals in how many in the first round?
Oh, five. That's going five.
Five. And you have the in your other NLDS, it's going to be the Cardinals and the Giants. How do you pass?
Cardinals in three.
Yeah. Ooh, a sweep.
A sweep
of it. Even though that you're not picking against Mad Bum in that one game playoff, you're picking against Mad Bum in the divisional round. I got you. Okay, that's good. just checking. Okay, so now you have, and then you have the Cardinals versus the Dodgers in the NLCS, and you have the Dodgers coming out. Is that going six or is that going seven? What?
I think we get seven out of those two. I think we get seven.
And you're taking Wainwright over Kershaw.
Yeah. Have you seen Kershaw pitch in the playoffs?
I have, and it's not good.
It's not pretty.
Turning our attention now to the American League, Bo, this is fun for me. This is the best thing that I have. I was looking forward to this. I can't wait. In the East, we have the Red Sox projected to win this thing at 86. You know what? I'm going away from conventional wisdom. Yes, I like Boston's offense. I'm not really sold on the rotation yet. Again, it's wait and see. The Yankees, I like their offseason quite as a tip. I think the Yankees had a pretty good offseason. I got to give a lot of credit to Cashman. But again, I just don't know yet. It's wait and see with me for the Yankees. Right now, the team that I'm picking, it's a team that's being projected to finish last. Just like every single year, you look at them on paper, and they're not expected to win 90 games, and yet they still win 90 games. I'm taking the Baltimore Orioles to win this division because, again, best manager, I think they have one of the best managers in baseball that understands exactly how to make his team go. He understands how to push all the right buttons, and regardless of the fact that Baltimore seriously does not give him any type of help at all.
Yeah, well, it's Angelos.
Right. That's a team that still figures out a way to stay competitive. They get Machado back. They're going to get Reeders back, which is just as good as, which I guess negates the loss of a guy like Nelson Cruz.
Once
those
guys,
and Markakis. And once you get those guys back, this is going to look like a little bit of a different team. And if you add those two to Adam Jones, that's still a pretty good lineup. I'm going to take the Baltimore Orioles winning this division. And I understand the Red Sox are projected to win this at 86. So I'm just going to give 88 wins to the Baltimore Orioles. Listen, that is a nine game improvement over what their projected is supposed to be. But until a team can step up in this division and prove the Orioles wrong, I'm taking the Orioles.
Well, yeah, you look at the Orioles, you think about it, they didn't lose any of the pitching.
Yeah.
Which is what has propelled them to where they've been the last few years. It's been their pitching, and they didn't lose any of their pitching. And you're right, you know, they get Weeders back, they get Machado back.
I don't feel comfortable with any other team in this division. I really
don't. I'm with you on that. You know, I kind of like the Yankees.
I kind of do too, but you know what? It all hinges for me on the health of
Tanaka
and also Pineda. Those guys have been bit by the injury bug. These guys have to stay healthy completely for a full season. If those guys can stay healthy and you can get at least a 500 season from CC Sabathia, I like the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
But again, wait and see. Same thing with the Reds. It's wait and see, and it's also the same thing with the Red Sox. I like the names that are in the rotation, but none of them are aces. Some of them might not even be twos. And you have a right. I like Justin Masters, and if he's healthy, he's going to be a very good pitcher. But yet, again, same question marks with the Yankees rotation. The same thing I have with the Red Sox rotation. Don't even get me started on the Blue Jays, Bo. Do not get me started on the Blue Jays. I actually think that's probably going to be the team that has the potential to finish last in this division, based on the fact that I really just don't like their pitching their pitching staff completely, and they just lost Storen, I believe, not Storen, but Stroman to an injury. And stay away from the Toronto Blue Jays. I'd be more likely to take if you ask me which team is not going to finish in last, based on these two teams, Tampa Bay and Toronto, I'd probably take Tampa Bay to not finish in last place. I'd probably take Toronto easily to finish in last place.
Yeah.
But I'm taking Baltimore in the East.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Turning our attention to the American League Central, though, and listen, it's easy to say Detroit because, you know, now V. Martin and Miguel Cabrera are on the cusp of making their spring debuts. A lot of people assume that, you know, if they're not going to be ready for spring training, for the start of the regular season, it will be shortly after the start of the regular season, and things will just be the way that they are with Detroit. I'm not a big fan of Detroit. I'm really not.
No.
Never really have been a fan of that rotation, coupled with that bullpen. We saw they were good enough to win this division the last couple seasons, but not good enough to win it all once you get there. And we saw exactly last year what wins championships, or what at least gets you to the cusp of a championship: pitching, especially in this league. You need mm-hmm. pitching to at least get there, and you need that pitching to carry. Don't get me wrong, you have to score. Mm-hmm. You have to score runs, but pitching is what's going to do it. They don't have it. I'm sorry. I understand. In the grand scheme of things, I understand it. And when you look at the Detroit Tigers on the surface, if Verlander could be Verlander, and you do have David Price, okay,
mm-hmm.
that's formidable. I'll give you that. But David Price, to me, is just like Clayton Kershaw, the American League version of Clayton Kershaw. Once you get to the postseason, all bets are off. Verlander has a better track record in the postseason than I would ever give David Price. And say what you will, Anibal Sanchez is back, healthy. That's not a bad swing guy in the rotation. I'm not sold on Alfredo Simon. I think he was just a one-year guy. He's almost 34 years old, and we don't even know what Shane Green is. The back end of that rotation, I'm not a big fan of, and I'm not a really big fan of. I'm really not a big fan of that bullpen either.
Bullpen's terrible.
Joe Nathan, 40 years old. Who knows what you have left in Joe Nathan? Joakim Soria, again, he was up and down for me. You get Joba Chamberlain back, who had a horrible second half. I'm just not a big fan of this bullpen. Not a big fan of the back end of this rotation. You can have all the offensive in the world, but if you can't pitch the lights out, I'm sorry. I can't mm-hmm. take you. The team, to me, that has all of the ingredients is the Cleveland Indians. And I know that it's not a chic pick to say. It's really not. I get it, right? The Cleveland Indians are basically, you know, they're the San Antonio Spurs without the rings. They're the most boringest team on paper in the American League. They didn't really do anything this offseason except for bringing in Brandon Moss. But you know what, though? This is a team that is counting on a lot of bounce back production from guys like Jason Kipnis. They need Kipnis to to get back to the level that he's been accustomed to, and they also need Carlos Santana to rebound. They also need Michael Bourne to rebound. And if you can at least get Kipnis and Santana right, and you add that to Michael Brantley and Brandon Moss and Jan Gomes, look out. This offense is going to be able to do exactly what Detroit to get. They're not going to hit as many home runs as Detroit and have that type of power, but they're going to be just as productive. And they have a monster pitching staff, a very good bench, a really good bullpen. To me, this is the team that wins the division. Right now, Fangraphs has both of these teams finishing at 84 and 78. So basically what they're saying is this division is going to come down to the last game of the season. Here's what I'm saying. The Indians are going to win this division, and they're going to win it by three. It's going to come down to the last week, but this thing will not reach the final day of the season. The Indians win this division by three. 85 wins. 85 wins.
85 wins wins the Central. Is that what you tell me?
85.
Wow. We're in the wrong division, dude. 85 wins.
85.
You know, I really like the White Sox. I really like the White Sox.
I knew you were going to say the White
and
Sox.
I think the White Sox can hit 88 wins. So I'm going to go the opposite direction. I'm going to say the White Sox do it, and they do it before the last week of the season.
I'll give you this. I liked the addition of Melky Cabrera, and I like the addition of Adam LaRoche in what I thought was a very underrated lineup. I thought those two guys coming in is going to really give the White Sox a little bit more stability in that lineup. And of course you add Jeff Samardzija to that rotation, which I thought was a pretty decent rotation anyway. And now you have that 1-2 punch with Samardzija and Sale. I think what's kind of funny is it's going to be interesting to see exactly how that bullpen is going to play out. I mean, they get David Roberts, and that was a huge get. They also bring in Zach Duke, Matt Albers, via free agency. They bring in Dan Jennings via trade from Miami. They got a revamped bullpen. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. But again, I think the Indians are a little bit better. I just think balance-wise, I just from top to bottom, the 25 is so balanced in Cleveland. And again, the thing I like about Chicago that I don't like about Cleveland is the fact that you're not really banking on a lot of bounce back years for the success of the Chicago White Sox. It's either they're going to be very good or they're just not. They're not going to be any middle ground with the Chicago White Sox. I think they're going to be a little bit better than a lot of people think. I actually think the White Sox are going to be the second best team in this division. I actually have the White Sox finishing ahead of the Detroit Tigers. I do. I actually have Detroit finishing third in this division. Ahead of Kansas City, who's going to be finishing fourth, and Minnesota's going to be finishing fifth. But I think the Cleveland Indians are going to win this division by three over the Chicago White Sox, who, by the way, are going to grab a wild card.
I agree.
Well, no, excuse me, because I actually have this division at 85. I'm sorry. So they don't grab a wild card. They're going to finish on the outside looking in of the wild card. But this thing is going to be at 82 wins for the White Sox this year. The problem that I have with the White Sox is the thing I have about the White Sox every year. They're the White Sox, and they figure out a way to choke this thing off in September. That's the problem. They're the White Sox, okay? That's what they do. They've only done it. They only had one season where they didn't choke it off in September. They actually ended up winning the World Series in 2005. But outside of that World Series championship, they're the White Sox. They figure out a way to screw it up. And a part of me thinks that they'll figure out a way to screw it up in September. But I do like the White Sox finishing ahead of the Tigers in this division.
I like the White Sox over the Indians.
What's your win total?
For the White Sox, 88 wins.
88 wins. Huh. 88 wins in the Central, huh? Okay. Fair enough. With the White Sox, I like it. So you've got the White Sox out of the Central. Now, to the creme de la creme, this is what we've been waiting for. This is the grand poobah, the American League West. Again, Bo, in the scope of the offseason, just exactly what team was able to improve their biggest needs. Of course, I think we all agree the Seattle Mariners were the team that had completely identified and then accurately addressed exactly what they needed to fix. And right now, Fangraphs has them tied with the Angels at 87 wins. They think that this division is going to come down to the last game as well, too. I don't see it that way. I don't think there's a team in the American League that has the least amount of question marks than the Seattle Mariners. I think right now in the West, I think they have the best pitching staff. And I don't really care if the Angels have a better offense or even the Rangers have a better offense. I think the Mariners are going to have enough offense. I think the addition of Nelson Cruz is going to give not only Robinson Cano better protection. Not to say that Seager didn't do a bad job. I think Seager did a fine job last year, but it's going to be allowed. It's going to allow Seager to not bounce between four and five. He's going to be settled there in five. And I like the addition of Seth Smith and Justin Ruggiano, righty lefty, that platoon in right field. You're going to put that in. They're going to put that in the second spot. So now all of a sudden you have, you know, if you get at least if you can get Austin Jackson hitting, you know, 270 back to where he, at least in back of his baseball cards as he's accustomed to hitting to, and you have very good on-base guys at 1-2, that's just going to mean nothing but gravy for guys like Cano, Cruz, and also Kyle Seager. This is going to be a team that's going to do some damage offensively, which is something we have not said about the Mariners for years, though. We have not said it's been a while. I'm going to take the Seattle Mariners winning this division. I'm actually going to take them winning it at 90 games. I think this is going to be a 90-win division. I don't think it's going to be anything higher, but I think for the Mariners last year winning 87, a three-game improvement is not that huge of a stretch. I'm taking the Mariners at this division at 90 over the Oakland Athletics, who will finish right around 86, 87 wins. I actually think the A's are going to be a lot better than a lot of people think, and I see a little bit of a step back for the Angels finishing third. I think it's going to be the A's that are going to grab a wild card this year coming out of the West.
Interesting. 90 wins win the West.
I actually think both wild card teams are coming out of the West.
Oh, I agree. I think the top three teams in the American League West are all in the playoffs.
All in the playoffs. And I do
think that.
And I don't think it's going to be anything higher than 90, because I think there's going to be a huge separation. And the reason why I say that is I don't think Oakland's offense is going to be anything special, but I think their pitching is still very good. And once they get a couple of their guys back from Tommy John surgery, just like the Rangers are going to get some of those guys back, once that happens, that rotation is going to be so deadly. And again, this is going to be like it was just a couple of years ago when the A's ended up winning a division with literally one of the worst on-base peripherals we've seen from an offense. That offense a couple of years ago wasn't by any stretch anything good, but guess what? Their pitching was so good that they won a lot of 2-1 ball games. They won a lot of one-run games. And again, the Oakland Athletics, especially with Bob Melvin, they figure out a way just to get things done. I'm never going to overlook Billy Bean. I think they're going to be the second best team, finishing three to four games out of the Mariners. But I actually do believe that is a wild card team. And I could also possibly make a case for the Angels finishing third and also grabbing a wild card, but maybe even the Rangers as well too, depending how things break with the Texas Rangers. But I will say that right now there's a potential for those teams to finish probably tied like at 87 wins, something like that. I think the Angels and the A's are going to be more closer than the Angels and the Mariners. I got the Mariners winning this division clear by at least three games.
Well, I've got the Mariners winning the West, but...
Doesn't it feel good to say that, by the way?
Not really.
Okay.
No, I've got the Mariners winning the West. Again, I don't... We just don't know what Texas is.
Right.
We really just... I mean, they could be the team that they were a couple years ago and win 95, 98 games, and bam, they're in. Or they could lose that many games. I don't like the Angels at all. I think that rotation is suspect at best. Their lineup is anemic, and they've got bullpen problems. They've got problems through the entire roster. It wouldn't surprise me at all if the Astros passed the Angels in the American League West at this point.
Mm-hmm.
The A's, I agree with you on the A's. They are going to be a lot better than people think. Everyone's focusing on how Bean has dismantled that roster. Well, no one's paying attention to the guys they got back.
Well, also people thought of the fact that he didn't really give up a lot of people out of off his pitching staff. That pitching staff is still intact. I think that's the one thing that a lot of people gloss over. It's like, yeah, you lost Josh Donaldson. I get that. Yeah, he was an all-star. But you know what though? I mean, they redid what I thought was the weakness, which was up the middle defensively. I thought they did a lot. I think they did a very good job. They figured out a better piece at first base than they had, with a revolving first base that they had last year. I like this team a little bit better from a defensive standpoint. I like this team a little bit better than I did last year, which was one of the reasons why they ended up collapsing, because I didn't think they were stable at certain spots at the infield. I think they got better.
Mm-hmm.
I think they got better defensively, though.
They may have. You know, I think that the A's are going to surprise a lot of people, not me and you. They're going to surprise a lot of people this year. I think the Astros are going to surprise a lot of people this year.
I do, too. I do, too.
And this is why, I mean, you know, I joke that the Angels are going to finish in last place, because I like to kid the Angels. I just do.
I will say this. All
you
teams,
can make the argument.
All teams in this division, I'm going to say it today, right here, on this show, all teams in this division today, they will finish at 500 or better. I don't see a sub-5. I mean, you can make the case that maybe the Astros finished just a little bit shy of it. Last year they won 78 games, and they got a lot better this year. The Astros got a lot better. It won't be out of the stretch of a realm of possibility to think the Astros can improve by 3 games.
No, not at all.
I'm sorry.
I agree.
Finishing at 81 and 81 would be a great season for the Houston Astros.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think for me right now, but I will take the A's and the Red Sox as being my wild card teams. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I can make a case for three teams, the top three teams in the West coming out, but I think right now I would probably say that I have the Orioles winning the East, the Indians winning the Central, the Mariners winning the West, the wild card teams are going to be Oakland and Boston. I think that Seattle would play Baltimore in the first round. I think East goes West, and then the Central would take on the wild card, which would be Boston and Oakland. I think in that situation, I'm going to take the A's in the one game playoff. I'm going to take Sonny Gray over whoever Boston's going to throw out there. I think that game would end up being, I believe, in Boston, because I think they could probably end up having a little bit better record than the A's. But I'm still taking the A's in that one game playoff, which would need to be Cleveland and Oakland, Seattle and Baltimore. I'm willing to take Seattle over Baltimore in the divisional round, and I think that's going to go 5. I'm taking the Mariners in 5 in that opening division round, and then I'm taking the Indians over the A's in 4, and it's going to be Seattle and Cleveland in the ALCS, and I'm taking the Mariners in 5, Bo. I'm taking the Mariners in 5. Felix Hernandez is going to pitch game 1 and also pitch game 5. I'm taking the Mariners in 5. It's going to be 4-1. My World Series is going to be Seattle and the St. Louis Cardinals, and I have the Cardinals winning in 5. It's going to be tough for me to pick against the Mariners because obviously Felix Hernandez, you know how much I love Felix Hernandez, but I think this is going to be a very good year for Felix Hernandez. I think he's going to be the American League Cy Young Award winner this year, but I just think at the end of the day, Bo, I think the St. Louis Cardinals, this is going to be another National League. I think this is going to be another National League winner, and I just think when it comes down to it, I think it's going to be the inexperience of the Mariners not even sniffing the playoffs basically since 2001. I think that's going to catch up to them. They're going to be that little chic Kansas City team from last year. A lot of people are really going to like the Seattle Mariners, but I think when it comes down to it, I just think the St. Louis Cardinals understand exactly what it takes to win on that level. But I still think the Mariners are going to. I think the Mariners, for me right now, are going to be the team that's coming out of the American League.
Well, you know, I'll tell you this.
Maybe six, not 5. 5
yeah,
is kind of hard.
I would say at least 6, but I'm not totally sold that Seattle couldn't beat the National League. I'm not sold on that because if you look at Seattle, Seattle's the one American League team that can actually match the Giants, the Dodgers, the Cardinals. They can't match the Nationals. No one can match the Nationals, but they can at least be competitive against them.
I would say
the only team in the American League has the pitching that can do that.
I think versus certain pitchers, you're right, but I would think that against a power lefty like Clayton Kershaw, I think that would be an issue.
We've seen Clayton Kershaw in the playoffs, Steve.
Right. I will say this, but I just think it's going to be interesting to see how Felix Hernandez would actually pitch with the enormous stage of the World Series. I don't think it would get to him. I think Felix Hernandez would be fine. It would be everybody else in that rotation. I'm not saying that they're going to collapse when they get to the World Series. It's an organization that has never been past Game 6 of the LCS. You know what I mean? They've gotten to Game 6 of the LCS, and they've always lost it. And so it's going to be interesting to see not only can they get over that hurdle, but also once you get to the postseason, once you get to the World Series and go up against an organization like the St. Louis Cardinals who know how to win World Series, I think that was the difference in last year's World Series. It's not that I didn't like Kansas City. It's just San Francisco knows how to win those series.
Yeah, but at the same time, you also talk about Kansas City. That was a bunch of kids.
Right.
And that was their first time. Robert Cano's definitely won some things.
Right. Right.
Nelson Cruz has won some things.
He's won an American League championship. Yeah, I mean.
You know what I mean? Like it's a little different because the roster is made up of veterans that have been there before.
Some of them, yeah. I mean, I will say this. I like the Mariners better than any team in the American League. I will just say this. That's how my American League is going. You have the White Sox in the Central.
I do.
And you haven't even said what your wild card teams are yet in the American League. I take it you think the both wild card teams are coming out of the West.
Right.
You're leaving Boston out.
I'm leaving Boston out.
So you're taking
I'm taking Oakland, and I'm taking Texas as wild cards.
Okay, so the one-game playoff between Oakland and Texas would probably – so do you have Oakland as the first wild card team or the second wild card team?
First.
So this game would be played in Oakland, and so you're basically – I would probably assume that you're either going to be facing Sonny Gray or you're probably going to be facing one of their top starters. And so Texas would be throwing who, Yovani Gallardo or Derek Holland?
Maybe. It could be Colby Lewis. I mean, with his postseason track record, it could be Colby Lewis. Just depends on how they're pitching at that time. You know, this is where not having Yu Darvish comes into play legitimately in terms of playoff position,
because you just
don't know. Whoever's the hot hand in September is going to be the one that gets the ball.
And who do you have winning that one-game playoff?
Oh, you know what? In Oakland, I'm going to have to take Oakland.
So you're taking the A's.
I got to take Oakland.
So this would be Seattle, Baltimore in the division series, and Chicago and Oakland in the other division series. Who do you have in those two series?
I've got Chicago over Oakland in four.
Ooh, okay. I like it.
Do you think Sale? You got Smarta.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
That theoretically is four wins right there. Anyways, continue.
Exactly. Yeah. And then I've got Seattle over Baltimore in three. Another sweep.
A sweep. Wow. Okay, so it's going to be Seattle and Chicago in the LCS, and this would actually be a very good series considering you do have Felix Hernandez, you have Felix Iwakuma, James Paxton, bang, bang, bang. And if it has to go to four, you don't want to pitch Felix on 3 days rest. You can also throw Taiwan Walker into that equation in a seven-game series. And then, of course, you could bring Felix back for game five, Iwakuma in game six, or maybe you do want to pitch Felix in game four and have him available in game seven if the thing extends. You'll have Felix on you have Felix pitching your three biggest games. The three biggest games of the season. So, I mean, there's a lot of intrigue in this one. Of course, you have Chris Sale, who, you know, I would probably assume was going to win every single matchup that he faces. the Mariners, I mean, don't get me wrong, now they have balance where they can actually have a lineup versus left-handed pitching, but Sale is phenomenal. That would be a game one, Chris Sale versus Felix Hernandez. That thing is going down to the wire. Both of those starters are going eight. If not nine, that's going to be a fantastic series. So I would probably assume that Seattle-Chicago is at the very least is going six minimum. If not, this thing is going seven all the way.
Right. And if it goes seven, King Felix on the mound, I'm taking King Felix every single time.
So you have the Mariners coming out of the West as well, too. And then in your National League winner is the Los Angeles Dodgers. So now you have the Mariners versus the Dodgers, which would be a dream World Series for me because I love both teams emphatically. I love the Dodgers. I've always been a Dodger fan. And of course, you know, I'm a diehard Mariner fan, so two of my favorite teams in the World Series. And, of course, now you have Felix Hernandez against Clayton Kershaw and also Zach Greinke. I think we probably agree that Seattle would have the better lineup in this scenario, but, of course, both teams can pitch lights out. How do you have that World Series going? L.A. versus Seattle in the World Series.
I cannot believe I'm about to say this. I can't, but
Make it rain, baby.
I've got my analyst hat on. I've got Seattle in five.
Seattle in five over the Dodgers in the World Series. So you have Clayton Kershaw riding the ship until you get to the World Series.
Yeah.
There's a loss for Kershaw in the World Series.
There's two losses for Kershaw in the World Series. Oh. He's going up against King Felix, and King Felix is the better pitcher.
So you think this is the year of King Felix? You think this is the year of King Felix and Seattle Mariners? I think it is well, too, but I have...
I really want to see King Felix in the playoffs. I've been waiting for that his entire career.
I'm waiting for King Felix in the World Series, and I think we both think that's going to happen this year. I unfortunately think they're going to end up losing to the St. Louis Cardinals. I just think the experience of the Cardinals is a little... If it literally was the Dodgers, I probably would take the Mariners. But I got to be objective here, and I just want to come out sounding like a complete Yahoo and just take my hometown team. But I think we both agree that both of us think the Mariners, in the scope of the American League, are good enough to at least get to the World Series, which is a far cry considering we were talking about the Mariners as being a laughingstock just not even 2 years ago. So very good. Very good. So who's your American League Cy Young Award winner, and who's your American League MVP?
Well, definitely King Felix is going to win the Cy Young. I just don't see any other pitcher who's, especially on a competitive team,
right,
that's going to actually get those votes. I think it's King Felix in the Cy Young. MVP, that's tricky because there's a lot of candidates that could be MVP. You know, if the Mariners win the West, you're looking at Cano, maybe Cruz.
Possibly.
Okay? You know, if the White Sox win, could be any number of those guys. I mean, that's really
Abreu.
A ragtag.
Abreu.
Right? You know, you look at the East, if the Orioles win.
Adam Jones is legit, man.
I mean, there's so many candidates for MVP. Like, it's not like Cy Young, where you have one pitcher that's just heads and shoulders better than every other one in the league.
My top three candidates this year are going to be Mike Trout, obviously. Mike Trout is easily the best player in baseball. I don't think it's a stretch. In either league, Mike Trout to me is the best player in baseball. I actually do think he's going to win the MVP again, consecutive MVPs. I think it's going to be a lot closer this year. I think my two top running candidates are probably going to be Robinson Cano. I think Robinson Cano is going to have a monster season, and because of the success of the Seattle Mariners, that's why he's going to be in this race. But yeah. if Miguel Cabrera to me again is going to be healthy, Miguel Cabrera is just a freak. I love Miguel Cabrera. I think he is just a dominant figure, and of course I do believe Adam Jones was legit enough to be in that group of five best players in the American League. So it's going to go Trout. It's going to go my 1, 2, 3, 4 is going to go Trout, Cano, Trout, Cabrera, Cano,
yeah.
Adam Jones, right there.
Yeah, you know, I'm with you in terms of like Trout's ability, but I think the Angels are going to be at best an 85 win team, at best.
Yeah, but you have them as a wild card team. I mean, we're talking about playoff teams. Usually this award goes to playoff teams.
Exactly. Now, if the Angels make the playoffs, then yeah, I could see it being the MVP again. I could. I mean, that's why it was MVP last year, because they had the best record in the American League.
In the National League for your MVP, is this going to be without a clear-cut star in the National League? Is this going to be an MVP that's going to a pitcher this year? I actually don't see that. I think Andrew McCutchen to me is my National League MVP.
Maybe.
If
Bryce Harper comes back and is actually Bryce Harper, maybe. I really don't want to see that because the guy's attitude sucks.
Maybe if the Padres end up having a good season, and the only player that in San Diego that I really like is Justin Upton, enough to win an MVP. But again, he would literally have to have a Herculean effort. To carry that team into the playoffs, and if that does happen, I probably would say Justin Upton. But for the most part, I think this could be a situation where a pitcher could also win the American League. I mean, Clayton Kershaw, very good example. I don't think anybody outside of Kershaw that's a pitcher that could do it. I mean, unless Max Scherzer just has an unbelievable type can't, like we're talking like 25 wins, like two losses, and literally is step for step along with Clayton Kershaw in the regular season. I mean, maybe you can make the candidacy there. But I think in the National League, I'm trying to figure out exactly who would be good enough to win this award. I mean, Andrew McCutchen to me seems like a very good bet. I would probably think that, it's going to take Yasiel Puig night and day to get up to that one. I think this MVP could possibly go to a non-playoff team this year.
Maybe. It could.
Which is why I'm saying McCutchen, because I don't have the Padres, Pirates in the playoffs.
McCutchen, yeah, it could. I mean, it's happened before. It happened with A-Rod in Texas in 2004 or 2005, something like that.
What about your NL Cy Young?
NL Cy Young? Oh, man. That's a lot of pitchers. It's the exact opposite of the American League. You got a couple of guys.
You have a lot of them.
MVP, but you got a lot that could be the Cy Young. I'm actually going to go out with a little bit of a wild card here. I'm going to go with Zimmerman.
Oh, from the Washington Nationals. Yeah. I was actually going to go same team, different pitcher. I was going to say Steven Strasburg. I think this is going to be the year for Strasburg. But I think you and I went to the exact. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, but again, I think it's going to take one of those monster season to overtake Clayton Kershaw. But then again, I mean, we're talking about Clayton Kershaw, and I don't think it would be a surprise if he won it again either.
No, not at all. Of course it would. Now, if he could just, win a playoff game.
I know what you mean, man. I know. It's so easy to rag on him. Well, anyways, Bo, that's going to do it for us. Thank everybody that tuned in. Next week, we're going to be back, and we're going to go over this again. And it should be fun. Well, because, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how next week plays out because, again, I think we're going to be getting into our first round of cuts this upcoming season. So, this upcoming week. So it's going to be interesting to see how things are starting to shake out. Maybe there's going to be some interesting cuts, Bo, that we'll get into. So definitely tune in for that. So, Bo, again, I love spring training editions of the Power Alley, and especially once the baseball season hits, it's going to be absolutely monster. So,
yeah,
Bo,
be great.
Do us a favor, man. Take us out.
See ya.
XOXO, Baltimore, you know I love you.